This is the United States Dressage Federation's official podcast. Hello and welcome to the program. I'm Chris Stafford, and on this week's episode, we're going to be hearing from Charlotte Jorst, who is going to talk about the June USDF Connection magazine article, Charlotte Jorst Takes on the World. She'll be here a little bit later on in the program, and we also have an excerpt from the 2016 Adequan USDF FEI Level Trainers Conference, which was held at El Sueno Equestrian Center and presented by Stephen Clark. But first of all, we would like to remind you that the views of the host and guests of this USDF podcast did not necessarily reflect the views of the USDF or its members. And we begin with an item of news from the US Equestrian Federation. The board of directors have announced that Murray S. Kessler was elected as its next president. Kessler brings a unique combination of equestrian and business experience to this position. His vision is to bring the joy of horse sports to as many people as possible. And the USEF also announced that Bill Maroney has been chosen to serve as its chief executive officer. Maroney has been serving as the interim CEO since the USEF annual meeting in January 2016 and will continue to lead the day-to-day operations of the USEF. Our other item of news this week is good news for pony fans around the country who'll be able to watch the National Dressage Pony Cup, which takes place July 8th through the 10th at the Kentucky Horse Park in Lexington, Kentucky. There will be free live video streaming on the USEF network with renowned dressage judge Axel Steiner providing live commentary. And you can find a link to more information on the National Dressage Pony Cup in the show notes accompanying this episode. And a reminder that the USEF Network website is usefnetwork.org. Joining us now is one of the top FEI competitors, Charlotte Jorst, who's going to tell us about her journey as an adult amateur and how she progressed to become a high-performance rider. Welcome to the program, Charlotte.
Well, thank you so much. I'm so excited to be here.
Well, we want to tell your story because I understand you recently changed your status from being an adult amateur to a professional, but you've done a considerable amount as an amateur in the sport. But let's begin a little bit further back, Charlotte, and tell the story of how you decided to move to the States from your native Denmark.
Well, that's a long time ago. I moved when I was 23 years old, and that was because the love of my life, my now husband, was over here working for Carlsberg beer company. And I actually moved over here and became Miss Carlsberg. So everywhere I went, I was wearing this green sash and everybody would yell after me, "Oh, there, Miss Carlsberg, Miss Carlsberg." So that was my grand introduction to United States.
And what year was that?
That was, oh my gosh, that was probably in, I think that was in 89. In 88, I moved actually over, so it's been a while.
Now, did you have an equestrian family background, Charlotte, and were you into the sport before you moved to the States?
You know what? I actually rode ponies as a child, but then, unfortunately, when I was very young, my dad died, and we didn't have any money, so I ended up not really riding. So I just rode a little bit when I was a very small child, ponies without saddles and stuff. It was very fun.
So your family encouraged you then to be competitive, did they, from an early age?
No, I would never competed before I came here, ever. I just rode ponies, you know, on the beach and stuff like that, just as a little child. I've never competed at anything. It was just like for fun, like in the dunes when we went on vacation and things like that. There was lots of sand dunes in Denmark, and I would ride like these little Norwegian horses in there and just fun stuff like that. But I was never competitive. And then when I was 18, I left for the first time. I went to France and lived there. And then when I was 35, it was always my dream to ride. I loved horses. I missed the animals when, you know, all those years I didn't ride. I always knew it was my dream. And then when I turned 35, my husband unknowingly gave me this four-year-old completely unfitted horse for me, and that we found in Reno, Nevada, where we live, and I started riding him, and he couldn't do any dressage, so we just jumped, and my timing for the jumping was just horrific, So we jumped for like 10 years. And then I started doing dressage when I was like 40, 45, or maybe even a little bit earlier. And then my timing for that was really great. And I just really worked hard on it. And then, you know, here I am.
So how did the competitive streak come about then, Charlotte? Because you clearly got the bug for this and became competitive, consistently competitive. How did that get inspired then, since you didn't come from a competitive sporting background?
Well, I'm a super competitive person. And in my career, you know, when we came here, we started Skagen Designs, a watch company. And now I have my Castel Denmark. So in the corporate world, I'm exceedingly competitive. And if you try to play a game of ping pong with me or anything, you'll see my competitive streak. I'm completely insane. And I'm also kind of a workaholic. So I can pretty much outwork anyone. So if I really set my mind to something, whether it's building a company or riding a horse or learning a new thing, then I really push on it. So I work extremely hard at anything I do. And this has been probably the hardest work I've ever done. I've never tried to stay in shape like I've done and work as hard just with myself and with all the ups and downs that horseback riding gives you. It's by far the most difficult thing I've ever done.
How did you find the horses then? Was it natural that you should gravitate toward Danish bred horses? Tell us the story about how you got your first dressage horses and what you were looking for.
The first one I got was called Asterius. He was a little, again, another 5-year-old, because I still didn't really know what I was doing. And I got him, and I actually competed him as an adult amateur, and I did very well throughout the ranks in Northern California and even sometimes in Southern California when I was working, you know, in my company. And, you know, I would just ride after work and just like everyone else. But then in 2012, we actually sold our company. And then I had a little bit more of a budget to work with, and I also had more time. So I went back to Denmark and I went back to Europe and found this horse called Vitalis, another 5-year-old stallion that, again, was not really the right thing for me, but I still didn't really know what I was doing. And then, but he was wonderful. And I went to Germany with him and competed in the world, competed as a 6-year-old in the World Cup for 6-year-olds, for young dressage horses. It was so much fun. But then I found out that he was not going to take me into Grand Prix. So I went back to Denmark and found the horse that I now ride that's called Nintendo. And I found him at a dress, Hellstrom's place, and I bought him as a Grand Prix horse, fully educated and everything. And that's really where I started riding at the top level, and that's been in the past couple of years.
Now, what about choice of trainers, though, Charlotte? Obviously, you've got choice over there on the West Coast, but was there someone that you found and you clicked with quite early on?
I worked with Volga Broman for years up here in the Northern California, and then I went down and I worked with Günther Seidel for the past year and a half, and now I work with Stefan Peters. But I do think it's a very difficult thing, you know, to find somebody that you really click with, that you can work with consistently, and that can help you in all aspects, especially as you really move up. And in the end of the day, you have to make yourself great, and you have to find your own method, because everybody else wants to teach you their method, and it may work for them, but it may not always work for you. So I think it's really important to keep to yourself. And I have a very special style. I always encourage the horses and talk to them, and because I don't have the strength to push them around and make them do it. So I have to really, it has to be their choice. So for me, that has been one of the most challenging things of everything. It's really been to find somebody I can work with consistently. But right now I'm super happy with Stefan. And now he's in Europe. But, you know, when he comes back, I'll be working with him again. So I'm working it all out.
When you first started to achieve success, and presumably that made you even more competitive and more ambitious.
You know, it's so funny, because I think it does make me more competitive. But here's the thing. You never really feel that you have arrived, or that you are anything, or that you have achieved. I mean, I think a little bit of a stick in the ground was when I went to World Cup, because that's arguably like the top 18 riders in the world and stuff. But other than that, I mean, it's such a humbling sport, because you always learn. There's always something that you could do better. Every single day you go out there and you ride the horses, and then you go back and reflect on what you did. And every day there's something you could actually have done better, or you could improve on, or you can try differently. And I think so I don't really feel like it is like that, where all of a sudden I've like arrived and now I feel like I'm great, because I never really feel that way. I just always feel that it's such a work in progress. And that's what I think is so intriguing about this sport, and really about everything. I feel the same about a job or my businesses, the same thing. I always feel I can improve.
It's a constant learning curve, isn't it, for all of us, especially in dressage, I'd imagine. But I'm just wondering, how has competition success made you more ambitious and want to have more horses? Or has that curve, that ambition curve, has that steepened with you in recent years since you've had international success?
Yeah. I mean, I set out to go to the Olympics, and obviously I'm not going to make it this year. But now I'm going to try for Japan, and of course I'm just going to keep on going. But I also think that life is always a balance, and you know, a lot of my competitors have done this their whole life, and that is what they are. This riding defines them. So they have like a place in Florida, and they have a place in Europe, and so they go back and forth. Whereas me, I have a great family. I have two beautiful daughters. I have a great husband. I have a fantastic business. So this is not my whole thing. So I do need to find a balance between keeping my beautiful family together and my wonderful company, and also writing. So that's definitely going to be a challenge. And I'm not going to be pursuing perceived success to the point where I you know, live all year in Florida and then the other year live in Europe, because my life is not set up like that, and I don't like it. I get really lonely when I'm on the road. I'm just not used to it. So I'm a little bit different from the rest of the people. So I need to find my own way of doing this.
What would you say then would be your career highlights so far, if you had to pick three career highlights?
I think that when I went to New York last year was phenomenal. That was so much fun to compete in Central Park. And then I think, of course, the World Cup was phenomenal. And then I think all of last year in Europe was really great. I did so great in Europe. I got like placed in all the big classes, and it was so funny, because I've always just read about like Edward Gall and Hans-Peter Münderhausen and Charlotte Duchardin. And now I'm on the same warm-up course as them. So that was like phenomenal last year in Rotterdam. I warmed up with Edward Gall and Hans Peter, and so those kind of things has just been mind-boggling fun. So I would say those are like my highlights.
Well, given your other commitments and family and everything else that is happening in your life, Charlotte, how much time do you have for riding, and is it every day?
I pretty much ride every day, but I also try to take breaks. Like I was just with my family, I was just 5 days in Napa Valley for our anniversary, and so I try to balance it all, because I think it's important, and I don't think the horses necessarily get any better from being ridden hours a day. So I try to do a lot of trail riding. I try to give them time off, and where they just mosey around and where they turn out and things like that. So I definitely have a different approach to the riding than most have. And I also think it reflects in the ring. I think a lot of the appeal that my horses have is that they're very happy. They're always very, very motivated. And they smile when they go in the arena, because they think it's so fun. I try to ride them every day. I try to focus on their strengths, so they feel when they leave the ring with me that they're very accomplished. If it doesn't work out that way, then I try to kind of pretend that we have accomplished something anyway. You know, then I do something easier. So they still feel accomplished.
You've switched from being an amateur to a professional rider. Now, why is that, given the context of everything else that's happening in your life? Why did you decide to do that?
The only thing was that you know, in the year-end awards for USDF and USEF and all that, I pretty much won all of them for Grand Prix, and I won and Prix St. George last year, and I just didn't feel that it was fair because I have the largest averages and as adult amateur in the country, and I just didn't feel it was fair to continue to do that and have those. I think it's time for someone else to get those, and then I think it's a good challenge for me to compete and see if I can't do the same thing, have the highest averages of in the professional world. So I'm excited about this new challenge. I made the leap, and now I'm going to go full on and see what I can do. I mean, I've been competed as a professional or in the professional ranks anyway, so it makes no difference.
So then looking forward to this season and beyond then, Charlotte, I mean, you mentioned Tokyo as a goal. How do you see this season unfolding for you? And do you have anything else on your bucket list?
I want to try to go to World Cup again. That was really fun. There's Omaha next year. And so I want to try to do that again. I mean, I would love to do that like every year until I'm like 100 years old. So I'd love to do World Cup, and then I don't know, maybe World Equestrian Games. I mean, all of those big competitions. But first and foremost, I want to keep the fun in it. I want to keep the fun for the horses. I want to do it my way, and that's what I want to preserve everything, because I have a lot of choices in life. It's not my business. I don't have to do it. So if it isn't fun, I'm just not going to do it.
Right. Now let's talk a little bit, if you would, about fitness. As a dressage rider, do you do any other activities for fitness or sport to keep you in tune for your riding?
Yeah, I do a lot. I actually swim every day, and when I'm depends on where I am a little bit, because my life has been so crazy traveling, you know, in Europe and everywhere. So when I was in Florida, I did yoga, which I absolutely hated. And then now I'm in Reno, Nevada, where I'm working over the summer, or I'm training over the summer because my daughter is getting married here. So I swim every day in our pool between 50 and 80 laps. And then if I don't swim or don't do yoga, then I walk 10 miles.
So you are a fitness fanatic as well as being a riding dressage junkie.
Yes, I'm totally nuts. That's what I started by telling you. I don't do anything halfway. I go all the way. It's so crazy. And that's actually a little bit detrimental, too, because sometimes I tire even myself out. I wish I could relax a little.
But if you were to take just one thing from dressage, of the, what gives you the most satisfaction, Charlotte, what would that be?
The most satisfaction is just being with the horses. You know, if I never had to do another competition, I would be just as happy moseying around with the horses, feeling them, praising them. And you know, today Nintendo was, he was so good. I could not, he had one of those rides, 25 minutes. And just, you know, the sense of compliment, of accomplishment from that horse when he walked out today. And I was praising, I was like, good boy. And he was just, he felt so good. And I think that's what keeps me going.
The article about you is in the June issue of Connection magazine, Taking on the World. Do you feel like you're taking on the world?
I do feel like I'm taking on the world. I've taken on the world with both my horse riding wear, Castel Denmark, and then I also feel I'm taking on the world with the horses. And now I'm a pro. I'm just going to keep going. I'm going to keep having fun, and I don't see anything really stopping me.
Wonderful. It is a sport that one can do for a long time. So enjoy what's to come, Charlotte, and thank you very much indeed for coming on the program. The very best of luck with your dressage.
Oh my gosh, thank you so much.
And now in our education segment, the FEI Judge General Stephen Clark explains some of the basic concepts of dressage in this excerpt taken from the 2016 Adequan USDF FEI Level Trainers Conference.
I'm delighted to be here to present this symposium, especially with my best friend in the world, Lilo, who you all know and I'm sure love maybe as much as I do. I'm not sure about that, but we've known each other for a very, very long time. And we've worked on lots of things together, and what I'm hoping to do is throughout the 2 days bounce some things off Lilo also to get some feedback and to tap in also to her depth of knowledge. I think it's really important from a judging perspective that you do understand the training of the horses. I think it's vital. Every rider goes to a competition, hopefully to win. Why would you go to a competition otherwise? You don't go to a competition to deliberately come last, do you? You know, unfortunately, somebody always has to come last, but every rider hopefully is going to a competition to produce the best that they can at the stage that they're at. And if you're realistic, horses are always at different stages, and you may know perfectly well that your horse perhaps isn't quite at the stage where it's going to win everything, and maybe you're going just to make sure you get the best from the horse at the stage it's at and give it some experience, because all horses need mileage in different situations as well. And I think for the horses that we're seeing these 2 days, that's an important part of it. I think to come in a situation like this with a young horse, it's a great experience and gets the horse used to this different situation. And I think judging types of horses, I always say to people, I don't care if the horse is sky blue pink with spots on it. If it fulfills the criteria of what's asked for in the competition, it gets the points. It's really that simple. If it doesn't fulfill the criteria of what's required, then it doesn't get the high points. The breeding side of things these days, and I don't think that we really ever give enough recognition to the breeders. The breeders are deliberately trying to produce horses that actually find it easy to fulfill the criteria of what we're after from competition dressage horses. That's really what it's all about, you know. You can have different types of horses. One horse maybe will find the collected work very easy, but is perhaps rather limited when it comes to anything extended to do with ground cover. Then you can have a totally different type of horse that finds the paces, the ground cover, the extensions, all that sort of thing very easy, but actually physically finds it difficult to take the weight on the hind legs and develop collection. There are very, very few horses in the world that actually have no weaknesses at either end of that scale. And those are the ones, if their training is correct, that end up with the medals. I'm sure you've all seen Vallegro on, if not in the flesh, in on videos and so on. And the reason that he so consistently wins the top slots is that there are basically no weaknesses in him, either physically or mentally. But more important than that, the training that he's received allows the horse to go to its full potential. And that's really what I want to talk about. Most horses have far more potential than we realize, or sometimes as riders and trainers, bring out from that horse. And for me, if a horse is to reach its full potential, it has to be correctly trained and without limits. Often as riders and trainers, we put limits on our horses by compromising over certain areas within their training. That's usually the problem. I don't want it to get too complicated. I think you'll see how things develop. But for me, it all begins with reaction. If a horse doesn't react to the aids of the rider, immediately there's a limit on how much suppleness, energy, impulsion you can develop. Think of the number of riders you see and work with who maybe sit quite well, but if you watch them, they're working sometimes harder than the horse, you know, sitting there pushing away because there isn't enough real reaction to their driving aids. Or the other end of the scale, you see riders holding back with a backward contact with the handbrake on because the horse basically is running away from them or falling onto its forehand, and instead of doing something about it, they end up compromising and holding the horse in a balance. Immediately you've put a limit then on any freedom or expression that the horse can develop. So the reactions for me are the very first things. The horse must be, and this relates not just to dressage, it's to any of the disciplines really. A dressage horse, not in front of the leg, a little bit on the forehand, being supported by the rider's rein contact, just won't get very high marks in the dressage test. A jumping horse behind the leg, on the forehand, supporting on the rider's hand, is dangerous. You can break your neck, you know. It's much more important. And I think the jumping and the dressage training is completely related. And I find it very interesting now, I don't know how it is in this country, but at home, our top jumping riders really seriously train their horses in, you know, basic dressage, but they really mean business, because these days to jump those top tracks, the horses have got to be in balance, they've got to be on the aids, they've got to turn instantly, and so on. So it's ever related. So reactions for me are the first thing. When you have reactions, then you can begin developing the horse from the point of view of its rhythm, its balance, its throughness, its ability to be supple equally both ways, and on and on. Basically, all the areas of the training scale you can develop when you have a good, honest, clear reaction from the horse.
And you can watch extended footage from this conference and other USDF events by visiting virtual events on eTrack at usdf.org. And finally, a reminder to USDF members that you can recognize outstanding volunteers by nominating them for the USDF Volunteer of the Year or USDF Youth Volunteer of the Year awards. The deadline for nominations for both awards is August the 31st, and you'll find more information on the website at usdf.org. This podcast is available on iTunes or Stitcher or any podcast app on your mobile device. You can follow us on Twitter or like us on Facebook for alerts when new episodes of the USDF official podcast are available. That's it for this week's program. Thank you for listening wherever you are in the world. And remember, the USDF is your connection to the American dressage community.